Hey, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here to talk about IRAs today. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. Yeah, we're talking about retirement. You know, people have money that they're making, and hopefully someday they'll live long enough to actually enjoy it. And people are living longer and longer these days.
Yeah, these days, we got a good shot at that, right?
I don't know, with all this war breaking out and international chaos. and everything, who knows? But
at the same time, all the advances in biomedical, and people are living healthier lifestyles today. So life expectancy is continuing to creep up. So we're going to be talking about retirement accounts today. We're not going to be talking about your airline 401k. That's pretty well covered. But we're talking about the IRA, specifically the self-directed IRA. We're going to be talking about Roth versus traditional. What happens if you pass away and you pass that on to your children? Some really interesting rollover strategies during the post-retirement years. So I'm excited to get into this.
Well, we are going to touch a little bit on how the decisions that you're making in your airline 401k might impact you at retirement, right? Because I think people that are saving, they don't realize that at some point, Uncle Sam's going to want their money. And so they're going to have this thing called the required minimum distribution on their retirement account. And that is going to lead us into actually having to distribute some of the money and making it taxable. And we have a lot of strategies around that that you might want to tune in and listen to. So that's what we're going to focus on today. We're going to talk about, like Tate said, traditional versus Roth, RMDs, self-directing your 401k, how it impacts it when you die and you give this to your kids. Because there's a ticking time bomb of taxes that you may be subjecting your kids to. And we really want you to, it's not about what you earn, it's about what you keep. And it's about what you keep in your family's legacy as well. And I think a lot of people think, oh, well, when I just die, I'm going to give it to my kids and it is what it is. But there's actually some strategies around what you can do so that when you pass away, your kids won't have to pay as much in taxes on your hard-earned nest egg that you're leaving behind. So I think there's a lot of things that people don't think about, and those decisions, the little ripples that you make, the little drop in the water now, those ripples will be very pronounced as you get longer and longer into your career. And so you have to start making those good moves today. That's what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. So with that, let's get to the show.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
So Tate, the old age question is traditional versus Roth. And we all know that traditional money gets the tax deferment, but then when you take it out at retirement, the IRS is coming for their pound of flesh, and then Roth grows tax-free, but you got to pay taxes before you put it in your Roth. So if you don't know that topic, it's a little bit, you know, elementary for this, and, you know, look that up. If you're a pilot and you're thinking like, how do I put money in my Roth? This is my traditional. What is my thought around that? There's a lot of really good discussion. But Tate, I want to ask you, Tate Duryea, what do you do when you put your money in your 401k or your IRA? How much do you put in traditional? How much do you put in Roth?
Well, I'll give you the attorney answer. It depends. Right. So I love this conversation, though, because it's always understood that Roth money is better because you don't have to pay taxes on it ever again. Right. It's like you get the taxes paid now, you get it over with. And then, of course, it grows tax free. Traditional and Roth both grow tax free, but you don't have to pay taxes on it pulling the money out. It's free and clear. So Roth money is always better. The issue is, how much are you making this calendar year when you're putting the money in? Because if you're having a banner year, you need every tax deduction you can get. And if you look at almost any mathematical comparison between the two, it actually is either very close, neck and neck, or it's better to do traditional because it's better to take that tax write-off now because you get more dollars on temperature and you have a larger sum of money that's growing over that period of time. The problem is, you know, and we'll get into this, the strategy of drawing down those accounts in your later years. And if you want to take a big fat chunk of cash out of one of those accounts in your later years, you're going to pay taxes on that just as if it was ordinary income, just as if you earned it on the traditional side. Now, the Roth is tax-free when you withdraw it. So the way I think of it, and I want money in both buckets, is the traditional side is great to replace your income, essentially, just to provide a steady stream of cash that you can live on, because you what you don't want to do is take $1 million out of your traditional account in 1 year because you're going to be taxed out the nose for it. But the Roth doesn't have that issue. And so I think of the Roth bucket as my toy fund. If I want to buy a really nice airplane or buy a vacation property, you know, I'm going to pull it out of my Roth because I don't have any required minimum distributions out of the Roth portion. I can just let that money sit. And when I'm ready to pull it, there's no tax hit on taking that money out. But on the traditional side, I want to avoid these big lump sum withdrawals. So that's how I think of it. What are your thoughts?
I love what you just said, because it's like that traditional, like you're going to have to, like if you're a pilot, you're listening to this and you're like, I don't even know what they're talking about. Basically, you're putting money in your 401k or your airline's doing it for you. And eventually you're going to retire.
Right.
You're going to hit 65, whether you want to work to 65 or not, doesn't matter. When you retire, you're going to have to figure out a way to make money. And what Tate is saying is that when you let that money come out of your retirement account and you actually realize that investment, or you actually cash it out, the government's going to tax you on the money that's in your traditional bucket. So when he says, hey, I don't want to take huge swaths of cash out of my traditional bucket, it's because if he takes $1 million out, a lot of that $1 million is going to be taxed at the highest possible rate.
Correct.
Because that money that's withdrawn is taxed at the highest effective rate. And I don't think a lot of people realize that, is that, by the way, that's great, you get this nice tax break, but if you get to retirement and there's $10 million in your 401k, I've seen many pilots already with over $10 million in their 401k. Guys, this is coming. When you take it out, if you take out $1 million at a time, boom, big tax hit. If you're on the raw side, I love what you said about like, hey, if I want to go make some big fancy purchase and I got to pull $1 million out to buy an airplane or something, you're not going to get taxed at all because you've already paid those taxes. I think that's such a good thing. And I just kind of clarifying a couple things that you said, because I have some follow-up questions. You also said something about required distributions, right? Required minimum distributions.
RMDs.
And look, as a 41-year-old, I don't, you know, I didn't really think about this very much, right? Like, what do you mean required? You know, wait a minute, 59, I thought it was 59 and a half.
Right, that's when you can start taking.
Yeah, that's 59 and a half is when you can actually start taking money out of your retirement account without penalties. So if you're thinking, okay, I'm a 41-year-old and I'm going to retire and start withdrawing money, I can do that at 59 and a half. But at 75 years old, the way that the rules are written right now, I have to start taking money from my traditional accounts. Okay, so that means that the IRS is basically going to take some life expectancy calculator. And look, I'll save you the fuzzy math, but I'm basically going to have to take about 3.5 to 4%.
That's it.
Of my retirement account balance, and I'm going to have to withdraw it and pay taxes on it. And that happens at 75 years old. So if it's one thing you can remember, about 75 years old, about 4% of whatever that traditional money is has to be taken out. Now, guys, like this is going to change probably 3 or 4 more times before you turn 75 years old.
Right.
This tax code is changing all the time. And in fact, it just changed, right? And the Secure Act 2.0. So I love what you said, Tate, though. I mean, the big takeaway there is like your traditional money is going to be your living money. And that's going to keep your taxable income down to a lower amount. Your Roth is your fund money. But I think an important distinction in there, Tate, a little nuance that you said was your money that you're taking out of your Roth is not taxable. This is huge. If you're thinking about the long-term planning aspect, traditional, you have these required minimum distributions. Roth, you do not.
That's correct. And you also don't have RMDs because you don't owe the government any taxes on it, right? So the logic here is the government is waiting to tax you on that money on the traditional side. And so eventually they're like, okay, sorry, Ryan, this has gone on long enough and you're going to have to start taking that out so we can get our share, because they give you a tax break on the money that you put into it 30 years ago. They let it grow tax-free during all these years. And now they're saying, okay, no more fun and games for you. You're 75. It's about time. You got to start withdrawing that money so that we can take our cut on it, which makes sense. The Roth side, you don't owe the government any money on those Roth distributions. So they don't care whether you take them or not.
That's right. Yeah. So Tate, I've got a question that I'm dying then. Okay. So like you talked about, you know, I think you're the type of guy that has a lot of real estate, has a lot of passive income, right? This is what we talk about on the show is, you know, we start diversifying our portfolio so that we're not just in the stock market, right? We're big advocates of that. So that way, when you get to 55 or 60, you can retire. You know, maybe you stay on the list for a little while and enjoy those nice premium trips or those nice cherry trips, whatever that might be. But let's just say, Tate, I think you're the type of person that wants to retire a little bit earlier than 65. And I know you have passive income building from real estate. So you're going to have that coming in, kind of like a barbell strategy. Let's talk about your retirement account specifically. What are you going to do from age 59 and a half to say 75 when you have to start taking those distributions? Like, how do you live? Because your income is going to go, let's say your W-2 income is going to drop to zero. So what is your strategy then?
Well, I mean, my strategy is, you know, I don't want to have to rely on my retirement account. You know, and I think that is one of the key things that we teach on this podcast, Ryan, is that there's a difference between a nest egg and a golden goose. And the nest egg strategy is, you know, what everybody does in their 401ks, right? It's like a balloon. You blow it up as big as possible during your career, and then you slowly, you know, deflate it, and you hope it doesn't get it, you know, it isn't empty by the time you die. You know, what we teach on this show is that, hey, there are other investment vehicles out there and you can diversify into them and you can buy assets that cash flow. You can buy real estate. You can, you know, invest in debt funds. You can buy notes. You can, I mean, there's all these different passive income strategies. And the idea, at least for me, is I want to get to my financial freedom number, which I'm getting there, and the financial freedom basically is just passive income exceeds your living expenses. And therefore, working becomes optional. And when I say passive income, I don't mean, you know, living on savings. I mean, I have enough assets generating passive income that I don't need to work anymore. And these are assets that continue to pay. You know, if you own rental real estate or, you know, really real estate is our favorites, but there are other strategies, debt funds, whatever. I mean, it generates monthly or quarterly cash flow on an ongoing basis, and it never is depleting the underlying asset. That underlying asset can be passed down to the next generation and in the form of a trust. But I mean, this is what I'm after, is I want to build passive income streams to the point where my retirement accounts become fun money.
Yeah, I think that's really critical, because I think a lot of people are like, what's the difference between investing in the stock market and this is how my portfolio is doing and this is, you know, real estate and this is how real estate's performed. But I think the major difference is not only can you benefit from that passive income between 59 and a half and, you know, when you have to start taking your money out, you can start benefiting from it now. Like, you don't have to wait, right? So like, you're going to get this cash flow that's going to support your life today. Putting your money in your 401k is great, but, you know, you're basically putting that away on a shelf for a much further date in the future. And so that's why I like having both, right? Like, you have both. Of course you have both. I mean, the stock market's done fantastic.
Exactly.
There's no reason not to be in that. But I think having both is just, you know, you're not going to have to deflate the balloon to take money out. And you're not going to, you know, it just sets you up for just a diversified income stream. So I think that's really good.
Precisely.
Tate, I want to ask you, traditional versus Roth, I know you have self-directed retirement accounts. And for those that haven't listened to the show before, anybody can self-direct any retirement account. All that means is you pick what's in the investment, right? But some custodians limit what you can do. So I know Tate and I do a lot of real estate investing with their self-directed IRAs. We have accounts set up at places like IRA Club or Directed IRA. We've had episodes on that. You can go back to episode, I think it's 110, listen all about how to set up one of these. But basically, you know, you self-direct into some of these investments, right?
And so do you.
And so do I. And so what are some things that you, how do you think about, like, you know, Tate has $500,000 to place into real estate syndications or real estate projects. You know, how do you think about which buckets of money to use on each different one? How do you think about that?
That's a really good question. So I like putting more of the swing for the fences deals inside of my IRAs. And what I mean by that is, you know, I personally, because I'm a fairly young guy, you know, you're going to pay capital gains tax on the gains that you experience in any one of these investments, right? So if I can put something that is going to be highly appreciated inside of a tax advantaged account, I like doing that. Cash flow, I like in my personal portfolio with cash because I want to be able to spend or save or reinvest that, those funds a little bit faster. Ryan, what's your strategy? Love to hear what yours is.
Yeah, I'm in about 25 different real estate syndications kind of outside of Spartan and inside of Spartan. I invest in all of our own deals. But, you know, one of the things that I really focus on is kind of the same, where for me, it's not necessarily swing for the fence or not swing for the fence. For me, it's what is going to actually pay a distribution. So if it's going to pay a distribution, then I am all about it having be in the bucket of my taxable dollars, meaning that cash savings, life insurance loan, you know, leveraging against a retirement account or a HELOC or whatever cash I have available. If it's going to produce income, that's where I'm going, hands down. If it's not going to produce income, then it's going to go into my retirement account because I'm not going to benefit from it anyway. And usually, because of that philosophy, because of that criteria, that's really going to make it so a couple of different types of deals are going to sort of emerge, right?
Right.
That usually means that if it's ground up development,
yep,
that usually means a swing for the fences kind of a deal. That's going to end up in my 401k or my self-directed IRA bucket. And it usually means if it's a kind of a buying an existing facility that's going to cash flow or something like that, I'm going to put it in my taxable account. And the reason why it matters too is because if you're investing in something that's ground up, you're not going to get the depreciation benefits until that asset is entered into service. So it might be like 3 years from now. You know, we have a deal that in Bellingham, Washington, where we're building a self-storage. And I was literally just talking to a pilot about this 2 weeks ago, which he's like, hey, I've got $150K of 401k money. I've got $100K of cash. What should I do with it? And I said, you know, well, this is the way I think about it, just from the conversation. I would probably put the IRA money in the development deal because you're not going to see cash flow for a couple of years. And I would put the other money in a cash flowing deal because A, you're going to get the depreciation that offsets that cash flow because it is entered into service. And on the ground up development, you're not going to be benefiting from that monthly income anyway. So just go do that. So that's kind of the way that I think about it.
I love that. And it's exactly the same way I think about it. I want to clarify a few things just for anybody that's kind of left behind here. First off, Ryan, you did say self-directed 401k and self-directed IRA. I want to clarify that you can have a self-directed 401k, but it's usually not going to be the Delta 401k, right? Or the United 401k. If you're at your current employer, boy, do I wish that we could put our company 401ks into some real estate deals, but you can't do that because the custodians don't allow for it. They're locked up and they have to be invested in the public markets. Now, that's not a rule that the IRS came up with. The IRS says you can invest in almost anything under the sun inside of an IRA or 401k. It's just that the custodians are not set up for it. So that's the first clarification I wanted to make.
Yeah. Can I just add to that? In this case, this pilot was actually a pilot I flew with at Air Wisconsin. So he was saying, hey, I still had my old Air Wisconsin 401k. They could roll it into a self-directed IRA with IRA. And I think he was doing it through IRA Club. And that's what enabled them to use the retirement dollars to invest. I think that pilot was now at Southwest.
Perfect. And that's exactly where I wanted to go next is how do you get dollars into one of these things, right? Because an IRA only has a $7,000 a year contribution limit. So it would take, you know, years, 5, 6, 7 years to get just the minimum investment amount for one of these syndication deals into it, right? And so typically we're looking at rollover dollars. So if you have an old dusty 401k from a previous employer that, you know, whether it's Air Whiskey or SkyWest or Spirit or whatever airline you may have been at as a stepping stone to where you are now, that's an opportunity. And then, of course, for our military guys and gals, TSPs, we see a lot of TSP rollovers today with people coming in realizing, wow, I've got $500,000 sitting in my TSP. it may or may not have done really well over the last half decade. You know, I mean, the stock market's been ripping. There's been almost nowhere that's been better to be just in the public markets over the last few years. But, you know, now, okay, you're at a major airline. You're like, wow, I have a very large Delta United American 401k. I'm getting a little stock market heavy when I look at my overall portfolio. Maybe it's time to move that TSP over into a self-directed so that I can diversify my retirement funds away from the public market. So that if there is a big, you know, wave of volatility, you know, I'm not 100% exposed to it across my entire portfolio. One other thing I wanted to mention, which I think is interesting, that is a common misconception, is you can have as many IRAs as you want. And that's something that kind of blows people's minds when they first hear it. You can have an IRA at Schwab, you can have another IRA at Fidelity, you can have another self-directed IRA with IRA Club. If you want to pay even more fees, you can open up an IRA with directed IRA at the same time. It's just that the aggregate of the contribution limit applies to all of them combined. So that $7,000 limit is the $7,000 limit for you. It's not per account. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, no, I love that.
And where that comes into play, especially, is that you do not have to roll over your entire account over to an IRA club. If you want to add some real estate to your portfolio, you don't have to take the whole $500,000 out of your TSP. You can roll over 100K, 200K, whatever amount that you want to bring over and start diversifying that other out. So Ryan, I want to ask you, you've got two kids. What happens if you pass away and you pass on one of your IRA accounts to your kids?
Yeah, I love this question. And this is probably a thing that parents need to pay attention to big time.
Yes.
When deciding, because you're not just deciding between how you're going to benefit from that traditional or Roth, it might impact your kids. So a lot of people don't realize when you die, your IRA can be inherited by your heirs in your estate, right? So you got to be thinking about this. And there's some specific rules about inherited IRAs that I wasn't tracking always, which is you think, oh, you inherit an IRA, it's going to work just like your current IRA. You can go to age, you know, 59 and a half, you can withdraw from it, you can, and then RMDs. No, no, no. You're going to have, you have 10 years. You have a ticking time bomb of 10 years where that inherited IRA has to be drawn down. And there's a balloon at the end, meaning that, let's just say, you know, God forbid I die at 41, at 51, you know, when I would be 51 years old, if I inherited, my kids inherited my IRA today, and 10 years from today, boom, they would have to completely withdraw it all and pay all the taxes. And so that's if I give them a traditional IRA, right? They'll have to pay the taxes. They still have to take the money out no matter what. But if it's a Roth IRA and not a traditional, they're not going to be stuck with that huge tax bill. So guys and gals that are listening to this, think about it. If you have kids that are successful, which I'm sure all of our listeners are going to have very successful kids because they're going to listen to the podcast and they're going to make tons of money, and their kids are going to have a successful life too, right? And they're going to be high income earners. And all of a sudden, they're making $300,000, $400,000 a year. And you give them this IRA, they're already in or pretty close to the top tax bracket.
Right.
And so now this inherited traditional IRA is going to come with a massive tax bill. So consider that in your estate planning. And this is why, you know, we've had Nevada corporate headquarters come on and talk about getting like a good will and estate set up, because you need to be thinking about these things, and it kind of backs into how you plan for your retirement, right? And eventual death.
And we'll get into Roth chunking in a minute here, but I want to provide an example. So let's say, Ryan, you unfortunately pass away when you're, you know, 75, and your son at that point has just finished residency and he's an orthopedic surgeon and you've got a $4 million traditional IRA that he inherits. Well, he has 10 years to withdraw that account. So that means that he's got to take an additional, on top of whatever he's making as an orthopedic surgeon, he has to take at least $400,000 a year, or he can delay and take, you know, more than that in later years. But the smartest thing for him to do is immediately start drawing that down so that he can spread that out across as many years as possible. But that's an additional 400K that's all going to be taxed at the 37% tax bracket, right? So he's paying at that point, you know, over $1 million, well over $1 million in federal, just in federal taxes on that money. When if you had been a little bit smarter in terms of Roth chunking over your working years, you may have been able to save him all the taxes on that. And of course, this is assuming that you weren't, you know, starting distributions at 59 and a half and living off of it. This is assuming that you had passive income. You were just like, eh, I don't really need my IRA. And you ended up passing it down.
Yeah. Now, Tate, I'm going to switch gears here just a little bit because we're talking about traditional versus Roth. And I loved how we talked about what you do, right? And you are a 10-year, you know, can hold captain, have held captain,
15,
you know.
I'll be 16 year this year. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. 16 years yep. now at the majors, right? So like you're well on your way, but I love the one tip that you give to new hires, right? Like if you're a SkyWest aspiring, you know, you're just got that job at Delta, or you just got that job right. at United, you know, there's one critical piece of advice to consider. Yes. Right. And I love asking you this question. What would you tell that person about retirement planning? You know, if you're in your first year or two of a major airline or about to go to a major airline.
Roth chunk, baby. I mean, this is, and it's so critical that you know this strategy, because otherwise the window is going to come and it's going to go and you will have been, you would have missed it. Right. So what this gets into is how Roth conversions are taxed. So let's say, Brian, you have a $200,000 401k from SkyWest and it's all traditional, right? And you get a offer letter from United and you're super stoked. You get your class date, and the first year at United, you only make $100,000. Well, if you were to convert $100,000, $200,000 worth of that old SkyWest 401k, it's going to add to your adjusted gross income. So yes, it will be a little painful, right? Because you're gonna ratchet up your tax, your AGI, your adjusted gross income. Basically, the IRS looks at it like you earned that income in the current year. Now it's especially painful. I know, because you're on first year pay and you're already making less than maybe you're used to making, and now you have to pay a heck of a lot of taxes, but it's probably going to be worth it in the long term, because now you've converted those funds and you'll never have to pay tax on the distributions. That $200K can grow tax-free for the next 30 plus years, 20, 30, 40 plus years. And when you pull it out, when it's worth millions of dollars, you don't have to pay any taxes as it's coming out the door back into your pocket.
Yeah. I mean, said differently, right? Like first year at the airlines, maybe you're making 125, 150, maybe I'm behind the times there. Maybe it's more, maybe it's a little bit less. But that is going to be the lowest amount of money you're going to make.
Right.
Period. Mathematical certainty. You're never going to make that low of income. Congratulations. That's awesome. Take advantage of it, right? You're in your lowest taxable bracket. You're going to be convert some of your traditional funds to Roth funds. Yes, it hurts, but so does everything about first year. So
suck right? it up.
Especially if you're like, I mean, come on, guys. If you're like, let's face it. If you're like under 26 or something, you got no excuse. Like you're probably still living at home, right? I mean, you don't have a family yet. I don't want to judge, but you know, you don't have kids yet. You're not right. paying for childcare and all this stuff, right? Like, do it. You will thank us later when you grow that Roth money and you don't have to pay tax on it, right? Now, of course, if you're coming in, you got kids and bills and house and mortgage and all these things. Yeah, it might be a little bit more difficult to Roth chunk, but it's good. And Roth chunking, all that means, we're not trying to throw out these fancy terms, just taking some of your traditional and converting it to Roth. And you do some paperwork to do that. Call your CPA. And chunking just implies that you don't have to do all of it. You can just do a small little sliver of it.
Right. That's made up, by the way. I think it was Mark Kohler that introduced us the term Roth chunking, and I really like it because it's not actually a convert. I don't know. There's all these different terms, right? Rollover, conversions, and sometimes it gets a little muddled. So I like the term Roth chunking because it's very clear what you're doing. You're taking traditional money, you're turning it into Roth money, and you're paying the taxes as if you earned that money in the calendar year that you're doing it. Now, there are two other windows, I should say, that it might make sense to Roth chunk during and after your career. First one, let's see, but you were listening to this podcast and you bought that short-term rental. and you got a heck of a cost segregation study done, and you got your earned income down to zero. Well, if you've listened to this show at all, you know that the bottom few tax brackets are very advantageous. It does not make sense to leave your AGI down at zero. Perfect year to do some Roth chunking, right? Because you want to get your income back up into the $150,000 to $250,000 range, because it makes sense to pay a little bit of tax. Those tax brackets are so low, it just makes sense to pay the tax. So perfect year to get it over.
Guys, this is so important you listen to this. This is, I think what you just said is absolute gold, absolute magic, because it's like, you know, somebody might come to you and say, well, I got my tax bracket down to like 5%. It's like, cool. You should have done things in that year to actually increase your tax bracket, not because we're about paying taxes, but because we want you to do stuff that is advantageous in that fiscal year that you have that low tax bracket. Convert some of your traditional to Roth in that year when it's low. That's what strategy is all about. So anyway, keep going. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I just really wanted to foot stomp.
No, that's great. Thanks for putting the color on it. So another thing is oil and gas. So we had an investor last year who came in with a pretty sizable sum into our oil and gas deal. Exactly for this reason. He wanted to chunk a sizable portion of his traditional funds over to Roth. And so he dropped a heck of a lot of cash into an oil and gas deal so that he could get a big old write-off. That works too. The next would be, what happens, Ryan, to your W-2 income? Just humor me here. When you turn 65?
Goes to zero.
Bingo. So you have had this, you know, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $700,000 income stream, W-2 income stream that you're paying really high tax bracket on. And then all of a sudden it goes from 700K to zip. Well, wouldn't that be a great time to do some Roth chunking?
Well, it's the second best time because that
right
money has grown in your career.
Exactly.
Right.
So don't exactly.
So don't make it a procrastination game of like, well, Tate just has to do it at 65 and we'll be good.
Correct.
It's a last like life raft, like, right, to come back out and say, hey, here you go. The market's probably going to go up in the next 10 to 20 years. You still have some time. Let's get some of that money converted.
Yes. And speaking of the market going up, this is another area where if the market is down, let's say you hit 65 and it's every pilot's worst nightmare, right? We're in a terrible bear market. Market crashes right before you turn 65 and you're like, oh no. Well, don't take any money out. You don't have RMDs for another 10 years. Just leave it there and do some chunking. And while the market's down, you're chunking at a lower valuation, right? So that's a really good strategy.
It will come back.
It'll come back, exactly. And it's also an estate planning tool. So if you have a huge portion of your net worth in the traditional side, you're worried that, you know, you might pass away and give that time bomb to your kids, it's a great time to just, as an estate planning tool, if you think that you might not use all of that before you pass away, it's a great tool as an estate planning tool to move it over into Roth for your kids. Okay, so Ryan, I want to pose this question to you. Tate's saying here, all right, just, that sounds great, right? Your income goes to zero and then don't take anything out of your 401k. Yeah, great, great idea, wise guy. How do I live?
Well, you just move into like a trailer. You just move into like a trailer park or something, you know? Hopefully you got enough in the savings.
Is this why people say pay off your house? You know, why pay off your mortgage?
God, I hope so. No, I mean, what would the training department do without our sim instructors that come back out of retirement? You know, I mean, there would be, they've got all the experience and B, their wives want them out of the house. You know, they come that's home, right, they're right. Home for a few months and they're like, get the heck out of here. Right. We've all heard those stories. So anyway, no, I mean, I think short of that, I mean, look, you've got to have, you know, if you want to really kind of not touch that nest egg and have like other things working for you, that's what this show is all about, right? We got rental real estate, short-term rental loophole. You're going to have various different IRAs to draw from. You're going to have syndications from real estate. You can invest in debt funds. I love the fact that you can be a private lender to people and make predictable monthly payments. You can do note investing. There is so many things you can do. You can go fly for the FAA. You can go, you know, work. I mean, all jokes aside, you know, work for the training department. There's a million things you can do. But my preference is to do it passively and on my own terms.
Definitely.
And so by doing that, that's investing in hard assets that produce income that are generally taxed more favorably than going and working in the training department. Nothing wrong with that. I'd probably be in that bucket of wanting to, you know, contribute back my, you know, 40-year career back into teaching new pilots or existing ones. But, you know, if you really want to keep it out of the tax arena, that's where, you know, hard assets, predictable cash flow, it can really be a lifesaver for you from not relying, you know, solely on your 401k or retirement account.
I will also add to that list taking loans against highly appreciated real estate. So if you have a rental property that, you know, has a bunch of lazy equity into it, do a cash out refinance, lever it up, you know, and remember, loan proceeds are tax free. You know, you could get $1 million cash out refinance on a rental property or your home completely tax free.
Absolutely.
You can borrow against a taxable brokerage account through an S block. You could also sell stock inside of a taxable brokerage account and pay long-term capital gains tax versus, you know, paying ordinary income tax. So lots of different ways that you can bridge that gap if that's what you wanted to go down.
These are things that we want you to start thinking about, right? Like start some goals. This is how we kind of set goals. We don't, you know, we want to maybe try to get as much as we can into Roth so we're not paying as much, you know, in retirement. And then we want to make our retirement account be that great thing we can, our kids can inherit, or, you know, we want to have IRAs. We want to have different diversified income streams.
Love it.
So Tate, you know, okay. So now we sort of get into this retirement, right? And let's say this investor, this pilot has done some syndications. They get to age 65 and let's say their IRA, their traditional IRA is actually invested in real estate and they can't just go sell 25% or 4.5%, whatever it is, they can't sell the percent that's owed in RMDs. What is that person to do to be in compliance with the IRS?
This is a good question. One that comes up with our more sophisticated investors sometimes is they go, well, okay, so I'm going to be 75. I got to start taking RMDs out of my IRA. But if my IRA is all illiquid assets like syndication deals, you can even put physical rental real estate into your IRA, although most people don't do it. Most people just do limited partner positions into syndications. How do you actually do an RMD when there isn't cash in the IRA to make the RMD? Well, you can get creative. What you can do is a partial distribution of that share. So if I had a $50,000 share in XYZ self-storage deal with Ryan, what I can do is I can distribute a part of that share to myself. And so we could do a simple transfer of interest form within either one of our companies that just shows, okay, how much RMD do you need to make? I think it's going to be like a 3 or 4% of the entire IRA value is going to need to be distributed. So what we can do is we can just distribute that many units out into your personal name. That works. Keep in mind also that RMDs, just like the contribution limits are in aggregate across all your accounts, the RMDs are in aggregate across all of your accounts as well. So it's just the total value of all of your IRAs, and that's what you need to distribute. So if you have an IRA that's over at, let's say, Schwab, you could do the RMD out of the Schwab account because you might have liquid assets in the Schwab account. So anyway, that's a question that definitely comes up. Ryan, I got one last question for you, and that when we're talking about Roth chunking, keeping on the theme of illiquid assets, when we put illiquid assets into the account, we want to do a Roth chunk. What are some tips and tricks for doing a traditional to Roth conversion once that money is in the IRA and it's been deployed into some non-traditional assets like a real estate syndication?
Yeah, I love it. And I love how this is probably my favorite tip in real estate investing because it's one that wasn't well understood initially for me 10 years ago, and now it's very clear. So we mentioned, okay, you get to 75 and you've got some of these assets held in your traditional IRA funds and you're like, oh man, now we got to take some units and distribute those into your personal name, blah, blah, blah. Guys, you shouldn't even get to that point because if you're making an investment in with your IRA and you have traditional funds, do yourself a favor, try to deploy the traditional funds into syndications first. Keep your Roth on the sideline for other things that you want to diversify with, but use your traditional funds to invest in real estate syndications because you can actually almost immediately reappraise those assets at a lower value. And you might be thinking, well, why would it be a lower value, especially if I invested $100,000 into something and then you know, ideally that investment goes up in value. Does it have to go actually go down in value? No, it doesn't. And that's because you lose control. It's illiquid, and the controllability of the asset is reduced when you actually give it to a GP or a general partner to make all the decisions, and you have no control, right? When you invest in the stock market, you have control because you can push a button and you can get your money back, right? And illiquidity has a devalue in the market, right? So this is the way the IRS sees it. So you can actually, so let's just like back this up, right? You invest in a deal with Turbine or Spartan, and immediately after that, you take it to an appraisal company and you say, hey, I put this $100,000 investment with my traditional IRA funds, and now I want to reappraise it. Well, you're probably going to get as much as a 30, 40, 50%. I've seen it as high as 70%, right? And I'm not giving a guarantee of what it's going to be, but I've seen it really devalued, right? So then now you take your 100,000, let's say now it's worth 70,000, then you go and you convert it. So now you're not converting $100,000 of traditional to Roth and paying taxes on 100 grand. You're paying taxes on 70, right? And I'll Correct. Give you just a really fast case study. We did a development deal, and a pilot put in traditional funds, 100K, and they got it marked down to 30 grand. They converted Wow. it to, yeah, $30,000.
I've never seen it beat up that much, but that's awesome.
I've seen mineral rights go down as low, like 95% markdown. Wow. Now I don't do mineral rights, but I've seen some pretty things. And like, this is why you want to use an appraisal company, because you want to be able to blame somebody. You want an independent, disinterested third right. party to actually like certify these appraisals. Right. And, you know, Tate and I will talk about, you know, who we use and things like that. But the thing is like, they can mark it down. So what happened with that investor, it marked down to 30K, and then they made like a $250,000 profit a few years later on that deal. And they didn't pay in Roth. So they didn't pay the money on the distribution. So rewind this, play it all over again. If you're not understanding it, because it is. Yeah.
This is like 303. This is like, you know, the advanced strategy here. But guys, for anybody that's not tracking, let's say you have a IRA with Schwab. Right, it's all traditional. It's got $100,000 in it, cash. You buy Nvidia stock. The next day, it crashes by 30%, and now your account value goes down to 70,000. Well, that's a great day to consider a Roth conversion, because you're only going to pay income tax on the $70,000 conversion versus the $100,000 that you would have paid had the account not gone down in value. This is exactly the same thing that we're doing in the passive real estate world. It's just that we're doing it in a more controlled environment, because we are using a third-party appraisal company to slap that valuation on the company rather than waiting for the market to, you know, I don't want to say hopefully go down in value. I mean, that's not usually what we hope for.
In this case, it's not about it going down in value at all. It's about the control. It's about a control. Like, you've taken dollars that are liquid and made them illiquid, and that has a lowering of value. And so I think, you know, it's just something people that can think about. And look, this is a complicated strategy. This is why Tate and I make ourselves available to our investors, right? You've probably had a call with Tate. You probably had a call with me. You can walk us through like your specific situation, right? And kind of figure out, you know, how much Roth do I have in this IRA from this old airline that I'm converting with IRA Club into this deal? How much do I have traditional? How should I break this up and invest it? Who do I call to get the appraisal? These are all things that you can talk to us about.
Reach out to us. Yep. Happy to help. Happy to link you up with an appraisal company that can provide that third-party fair market value report.
This is literally what we talk about all day.
We love it.
Yes. Well, it's been fun.
This has been really fun. Hopefully this demystified a little bit around, you know, self-directed retirement accounts. They are an amazing tool. If you've got an old TSP or a dusty 401k that isn't really doing anything, it's a great way to activate those funds. You know, people oftentimes get a little down the rabbit hole in terms of like, well, you know, should I use cash or should I use my SDIRA funds? And it's like, well, where do you have cash sitting around? Like, if you don't have any cash on hand, this is a great, you know, there we can get into optimization strategies in terms of like what's better to put into an SDIRA versus what's better to invest in with cash. Really, where I look at it is like, okay, well, how powerful are the tax benefits of what you're investing in? If you're investing in a deal that has really, really great tax advantages, IRA is a double-edged sword, right? You aren't going to pay any capital gains tax on the growth inside the account, but you also lose any upfront tax benefits. So that's kind of how I think about it. But at the end of the day, you know, if you've got lazy equity sitting there that isn't doing anything, you know, we're all about just, you know, look around your financial portfolio and look for ways to optimize things. And that's one of the lowest hanging fruit items that we commonly see.
Love it. Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you have any questions, pop into the Facebook forum, ask this question. Let's get a conversation going about it. If you haven't left a review for Passive Income Pilots, we would love a review, unless it was a bad review. No, I'm just joking. I always say that. No, but we'd love a review. Super fun to hear that there's another pilot out there going and flying Cubs at Harvey Airfield. This isn't like an endorsement of them or anything, but it's kind of fun to hear that our listeners are doing some tailwheel flying time. Love to hear that. But anyway, we really appreciate everybody tuning in, being part of our show, being part of our community. We'll see you on the next episode.
Take care, everyone. Thanks.